World Ain't Ready, a Les Mis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 6. Grantaire isn't worried Angelos will treat him differently, now that the cat's out of the godless bisexual bag. Angelos is many things, but he's not a hypocrite. Given his political leanings, it's clear he'd be down with godless queers of all stripes, even if he were straight. Of course, that's all a moot point now, since Angelos is officially into dudes. Into dudes, but with a libido as slow-growing and majestic as the mighty Sequoia. Into dudes, and crushing on one of them, which is something Grantaire needs to stop thinking about. So naturally, he spends the entire drive home thinking about nothing else. The thing is, Angelos doesn't know a lot of people. For that matter, Angelos doesn't even seem to see beyond his own personal social justice island, so it would almost need to be someone in the ABC. But no matter how hard Grantaire mulls it over, and he runs a stop sign trying, he can't come up with the promising candidate for Mystery Dream Date. Angelos's first two clues are so vague that they might have been general examples, and the one about being a good person applies to literally every member of the ABC. Hell. You could argue it even applies to Grantaire, he thinks, as he rolls up to the intersection of Hemlock and Miller, nearly colliding with the red truck, because on second thought, maybe on Friday Angelos had seemed kind of struck by Grantaire's refusal of any payment for the fake dating. And also, wouldn't that explain the weird laughing jag? But that doesn't work, he reminds himself, as he swerves at the last second, the owner of the truck expressing a lot of feelings out the window. Angelos has never wanted Grantaire to have anything to do with the ABC, was only relieved when Grantaire lent him a book instead of trying to talk to him, is upset that Grantaire is coming along to Jolie's. Angelos doesn't want him around. It's a fairly damning piece of information. Besides, if Grantaire was the one he liked, that would turn Angelos's third clue into some kind of weird passive-aggressive half-confession. And who does that shit? It somehow doesn't spare him from a mostly sleepless night, punctuated by some bizarre dreams around 4 a.m. He wakes up the next morning resolved to stop obsessing. Maybe the whole description was about that guy at Angelos's old school. Maybe Angelos met a college kid over Christmas break. That doesn't make perfect sense, but the alternative is spending all future ABC meetings jealously glaring at any guy who displays convictions or carries his backpack interestingly. At any rate, Grantaire's got other problems to worry about. Or, not worry. Because he's not anxious now that Angelos knows the truth about his orientation. He's not. It's not like this can change anything. It wouldn't make Angelos think less of him. And Grantaire is so far down into the hole that it couldn't possibly help him much either. So there's no reason at all to get worked up about it. But every few minutes, Grantaire's mind drifts away and comes back to land on Angelos knows. And every time, it's an electric shock. Between the fake dating and the genuine Kinsey scale business, Angelos has Grantaire's two biggest secrets on lock. Angelos has all the tools needed to destroy him. On some level, he has to be aware that he's holding the button to a fucking nuclear detonator. And yeah, Grantaire feels a bone-deep trust that Angelos isn't going to use it against him, but he could. Grantaire doesn't even know which half of that sentence is scarier. All that intimacy, and they'll never even make it to first base, Grantaire thinks, rummaging in his locker for the book they're reading in English. Ethan Frome. He's praying they won't have to write an essay about it, since his only thought on the whole thing is, bummer. No amount of messing with the font and margins is going to make that 3 pages double-spaced. It's been years since he could drag up the energy to really care about that shit. He's read The Grapes of Wrath 3 times, though. That's not even about Angelos. It's just, he keeps picking it up again. He almost wants to make Eponine read it, just so he could have someone to talk to, because there are parts that make his brain feel like it's going to vibrate out of his skull, but also parts he knows he's not getting. He'd ask a teacher, if he didn't think that was bound to end in tears. They'd be tears of boredom, but still. He'd ask Anjelros, except for every single thing about that idea. Ethan Frome is stuck to the bottom of the locker, in a dried-up puddle of something that's attracting ants. He pries up the back cover with a snort. One more misfortune for Mr. Frome. Grantaire can relate. Especially when he shuts the door of his locker, and Anjelros is standing right there. Jesus! Too late, Grantaire reminds himself that boyfriends probably don't curse in surprise and drop shit when they see each other. By then, the book is already sliding dangerously out of his fingers. They both make a grab for it, hands knocking together. Anjelros' skin is warm. Grantaire jerks back. "How's your day going?" Anjelros asks, hooking his thumbs on the straps of his backpack. With his shoulders hunched under the weight of textbooks, he looks almost life-size, like you could hug him without searing yourself on his halo. If Grantaire's smile comes out a little helpless and uncalculated, well, one of the few perks of the setup is nobody can call him on it. A foot away, Eddie Greer makes an involuntary grunt of disgust. It's so stupid. Last year, Eddie and his girlfriend made out all over the sophomore hallway, with such moist, sweaty fervor that Grantaire could sometimes hear the smacking sounds through his headphones. What would Eddie even do if they took it any further? Grantaire's best guess involves a lot of vomiting. "It's starting to get better," Grantaire says, as warm as he can make his voice go. Would it be over the top if he, like, reached over and stroked Anjelros' bicep? Yes, he thinks. Yes, it would be. Shame. Anjelros starts to twist around to see what Grantaire's reacting to, catches himself, and looks to the other side of the hallway instead, where the window reflects a clear view of Eddie yanking notebooks from his locker. Anjelros smiles then, dangerous in a way that makes Grantaire's insides squirm happily. "That's so sweet," he says. "I missed you." "Aw, since yesterday?" says Grantaire. "Well, it felt like longer," says Anjelros, and Grantaire can't think of any retort to that, so he ducks his head. A stray curl falls directly into his eyes. Anjelros tucks it back in place. The pad of his thumb brushes the shell of Grantaire's ear, and Grantaire fights conflicting urges to run in the other direction or purr like a cat. Behind them, there's a slam of metal on metal, and Eddie stomps by, with a face like puking is an option after all. It's an even balance of terrifying and exhilarating. So is the look of vicious satisfaction on Anjelros' face. "As hobbies go, it's cheaper than skydiving," Grantaire offers. Anjelros nods, watching Eddie's retreating back. "Was that all right?" he asks in a low voice, once Eddie's out of earshot. Grantaire makes a sound of agreement. "Good," says Anjelros. I wanted to bug him. Jayon's told me things. That could mean almost anything. Like what? Says Grantaire. Eddie's the reason people call him Jayon Prufairy. Grantaire frowns. He hadn't known that, but then, he also didn't know he was ruining Eponine's reputation as it was happening. Grantaire's track record on this shit is not amazing. A week ago, he would have described Eddie as a friend. Not a close one. But still, they talked in class. Eddie's made him laugh more times than he can count. Grantaire's also lost count of the number of times he's gritted his teeth when Eddie's jokes skated towards douchey. Gritted his teeth and said nothing. "It's okay. He's kidding. It's just a joke. He doesn't mean it. And if he does mean it, you wouldn't be able to change his mind anyway." Grantaire's run that tape into dust. It's not like he didn't know on some level who he was dealing with. "Fucking people," he mutters, all-inclusive. The warning bell rings. Grantaire doesn't move. "Don't write off everyone," says Anjelros. "It's just a vocal minority who..." Grantaire steamrolls right over that, doesn't even care. Everyone lets him do it, though. If they know it's wrong and they let it happen, that's not better. Maybe they need someone to show them there's another way, Anjelros counters. Christ, his eyes are so blue. Grantaire has to look away. He picks the floor. "Hey," says Enjolras. "If nothing else, we made him uncomfortable?" It's tentative, almost consoling, and the idea of Enjolras trying to cheer him up is enough that Grantaire can manage a weak smile. Enjolras seems to find this reassuring. There's some mischief in his tone when he adds, "I think if I'd kissed you, his brain would have exploded." Grantaire skims right fucking past all possible mental images, and also the sound of Enjolras' voice saying, "If I'd kissed you," which is mental napalm. "Projectile vomit," he says instead. "Have you seen The Exorcist?" Enjolras shakes his head. "Well, have you seen a fire hose?" says Grantaire. He mimes a stream spraying from his mouth. "Gross," says Enjolras, and his face contorts in disgust. But maybe he is a true teenage boy after all, because he also sounds a little delighted. Enjolras the fiery-eyed crusader could move mountains, but Enjolras the human makes Grantaire feel like a giant butterfly is living behind his sternum. "Oh, also?" Grantaire leans in and drops his voice to the barest whisper, because he's nothing if not accommodating of Enjolras' paranoias. "That move with the reflections in the glass? That was some spy-level shit." They both instinctively eye the window, where their ghostly doubles stand with their heads together, conspiratorial. Cozy. "Or like a magician," Grantaire rambles. "Smoke and mirrors." The hallway isn't empty, but it's sparse, and Enjolras is apparently comfortable enough to whisper back, "I think we're getting better at this." It probably helps that the whispering looks cuply as hell. "Better than the time with the pizza?" says Grantaire. They're standing really, really close. He should move away. He knows he should. "Because that was a train wreck. I mean, it worked." Enjolras' breath is warm against his ear. Grantaire bravely soldiers on. "Granted," Enjolras adds, "by the skin of our teeth." "Our teeth. Our." "By the thickness of Mike's skull," says Grantaire. "Now there is a boy who doesn't know the capital of Portugal." They're still angled slightly towards the glass. Blurred and half-transparent, reflected across a hallway, they are almost convincing. Grantaire skates along on that high until government, when he walks in to discover that someone has drawn a dick on his desk. He stands there for a minute, blocking the aisle, trying to convince himself he's looking at a coincidence and not, like, a hate crime. People do just draw dicks on things sometimes. There's no reason it means anything. He knows this. The timing is hard to get around, though. He dumps his books on top so he doesn't have to look at it, so that nobody will see and think, what even? That he drew it himself for some quick porn? That he's so attracted to dudes that it appeared overnight, like the Shroud of Turin? Last week, he would have laughed once and moved on, but now suddenly he's a fucking conspiracy theorist. Cosette files in right before the bell and smiles at him, talks to him when she can. But it's harder to smile back when the whole time they're sitting there, that stupid cock and balls is lurking under his copy of The United States, Democracy in Action. Earth science is boring. So boring. Grantaire almost misses being the kind of kid who raised his hand just to make puns about rocks. He does miss the days when that's why people hated him. At least it was for something he was doing, not something he's pretending to do. He finishes the homework in about 10 minutes, and then he doodles all around the edges. Stars, trees, feathers, hands. Not anyone's hands in particular. Not Enjolras' hands. Reaching out to fix Grantaire's hair. Casual. Warm. Just hands. Generic. Grantaire shades in the tendons and thinks that if he's going to keep lying to himself, he should probably get better at it. The only two people at the lunch table when he shows up are Eponine and Combeferre. They're sitting across from each other, avoiding eye contact. She's got a battered CD player and headphones, and Combeferre is seemingly absorbed in his textbook. Except it's Combeferre. So maybe the single-minded enthusiasm for German verbs is real. She frees one ear when she sees him. Muted, tinny music seeps out of the earphone. It's hard to tell, but if he had to guess, it's some angsty 90s band where a girl with weird lipstick snarls stuff about everyone who's ever wronged her. Eponine's kind of going through a phase. Also, she doesn't have any food. "Did you forget your lunch?" Grantaire asks. She nods, but she nods while blinking a lot, which means no. He reminds himself not to push, that their friendship relies on not pushing, but he doesn't miss the way her eyes track his bag of chips when he sits down, and he can't stop himself from saying, "Want some breadsticks or something?" She squints at him, and he scrambles for a supporting argument. It's only fair after all the free booze, or maybe some kind of pay me back later by keeping your brother in line joke. But Eponine just mumbles, like, if you want to, whatever. Which means yes. By the time he returns, bearing a cardboard boat of garlic bread, the rest of the APC has arrived, and things are less weird. For a very relative definition of less weird, Grantaire thinks, snagging the free spot next to Enjolras and greeting him with a quick little side hug that hopefully looks nonchalant and cool. In the end, it's hard to tell whether Enjolras treats him differently post-coming out. They won't even be alone together again until the ride home on Friday. When all your interactions are built on a lie, what's baseline? He gives Grantaire an awfully weird look for asking Combeferre what the hell Mercutio's deal is, though. "You know you didn't have to reread the play just because he told you, right?" Enjolras says. And Grantaire uses every last ounce of his willpower to bite back the sarcastic comments pushing at the roof of his mouth. He thought they were over this whole utter shock that Grantaire knows what books are thing. "It wasn't a problem," Grantaire says instead. "I know they work you guys to the bone in honors lit, but over in dishonorable lit, they give us slower kids some downtime." "Between the naps and the macaroni art," Eponine slurs through a mouthful of bread. "Regular English is like 50% naps," he agrees. "Hey," says Enjolras. Grantaire turns, wary. What has he done to offend? "Stop calling my boyfriend slow." They're being playful now. That's a thing, apparently. Grantaire can do this. He can totally do this. "Make me," is the first response he can think of, so he goes with that. His stomach sinks a second later. Enjolras was being fake supportive, but Grantaire took it to fake flirty. Shit. In front of an audience, too, which means Enjolras is trapped having to respond. Grantaire's given him a reason to get offended after all. Backing down would give them away. He raises his eyebrows, trying not to show it on his face. He'll apologize later. Enjolras raises his eyebrows back and leans closer, tracing one hand up Grantaire's forearm. Grantaire swallows, involuntary. He tries not to shiver. He may not always register how hot Enjolras is, upstaged by the sheer force of that personality, but at present, he is acutely aware. "You sure you want to go down this road?" Enjolras says, in a low voice. Grantaire doesn't just want to go down the road, he wants to barrel down it. He wants to break every speeding law ever invented. He also wants to run screaming in the opposite direction. It's confusing. "I'm sure you're great at macaroni art," says Musichetta, breaking the spell. Combeferre twirls his fork. "You still want to talk about the Mercutio issue?" "More than anything," says Grantaire with feeling. "What is even his deal?" "Ooh, boy," says Combeferre. "How long do you have?" Grantaire can't always follow what he's saying, but he appreciates the way Combeferre talks about books, like a detective sniffing out a trail of clues. He also appreciates how the lecture lets Grantaire and Enjolras off the hook for a while. They don't need to fill the silences with couply chatter, because there are no silences. And, if he's honest with himself, Grantaire appreciates how, as Combeferre gets going, Enjolras leans to the right until their arms brush. No meetings on Tuesdays means Grantaire can actually leave school at an hour that makes sense. In theory. I think I have a flat tire, he says, as he and Eponine approach the van, which is sagging at an awkward angle. Eponine swears under her breath and jerks her headphones off. I fucking hate these fucking people, she says, pointing to the 3-inch nail embedded into the treads of the front left tire. And yep, that would do it. So Eponine walks over to the middle school to retrieve her brother, while Grantaire calls AAA and hangs out on the median. He wants to reread Romeo and Juliet, or maybe Grapes of Wrath again, except he doesn't have either with him, so instead, he just reads ahead in Ethan Frome. For the record, his only reaction is still, bummer. He should have made Eponine leave him her CD player. She and Gavroche take forever to get back. The AAA guy beats them to it, rolling up in his truck and changing the tire with a grumpy efficiency. He doesn't talk more to Grantaire than is strictly necessary. Everything about his quick, jerky movements and constant eye-rolling screams, kids these days, as if Grantaire managed to drive on to the upturned point of a nail through sheer youthful recklessness. Whatever you did, son, don't do it again, the AAA guy mutters, as he climbs back into his truck. Grantaire watches him drive away, eyes stinging, knowing that, in 5 minutes, he's going to have so many snappy comebacks it'll be like fireworks going off in his skull. That night, Gavroche agrees to burn all of Barrel's requested songs in exchange for some handheld video game thing he found wedged behind the nightstand. It was close to Grantaire's heart once, but the graphics are shitty and he hasn't played it in years. Gavroche claims he's interested in it for the vintage appeal, a thought that seems designed to make Grantaire's head hurt. The kid is also fascinated by Barrel's music choices. This mix is like art, he breathes, poring over the crumpled piece of notebook paper. Who is this guy? Behind him, Eponine makes frantic throat-slitting motions, like Grantaire can't tell it's a bad idea to expose an impressionable young middle schooler to the concept of Barrel. Just some dude, he says vaguely. Gavroche's eyes are round and earnest. Does he go to school with you? Can I meet him? He's a Republican, Grantaire invents. As Eponine blurts out, he wears socks with sandals. Gavroche looks back and forth between them, shrugs, and returns his attention to the list, where the next item he reads makes him laugh out loud. Just who is Barrel? The world may never know. You won the eternal respect of a 12-year-old last night, Grantaire reports the next day in Conicon. Well, yeah, says Barrel, who's got this irritating habit of never being wrong-footed by anything. I'm basically a role model. Yesterday, he pierced his own belly button with the safety pin because he was bored in class. Grantaire nods. Step one to building up my child army, Barrel muses. Dream big, man, says Grantaire, handing over the pile of CDs. Oh, awesome! Barrel reaches into his backpack and pulls out a bulging plastic bag full of jewel cases. He dumps it onto Grantaire's desk. Trade. What? Grantaire peers inside. It's a pile of mixes, if he had to guess, given that none of them have album titles and they're all labeled things like songs about birds that aren't really about birds, and wham kapow kapow, and Spyrock. One CD case has no words at all, and is just covered in penguin stickers. Did you think I was just going to take a bunch of your shit? Says Barrel. Have some faith. Grantaire, stupidly, is almost choked up. Thanks, bro, he manages. Not a problem, Barrel tells him. He settles back in his chair. So, he adds, casual. You over whatever issue you had with me? It's such a sudden turn that Grantaire is blindsided. What? He decides on at last. Come on, says Barrel. Second semester? Freshman year? His own freshman year. Grantaire's failed attempt. Grantaire shrugs. That whole half of the year is kind of a blur. Not in a good way. He remembers struggling to focus on anything, and he remembers not being able to eat much, skipping lunch anyway because he couldn't handle the cafeteria. A few people stand out to him, older boys who seemed to have taken a vow to make his life hell, but for the most part, the other kids are indistinct, an ebbing, flowing sea of disdain and indifference. He's not sure he knew Barrel's name. "We had art together," Barrel adds, prompting. "It was only 3 years ago, dude. You never did the assignments. You just sat in the back and drew, like, screaming faces." Grantaire has no memory of this, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. Whenever he finds sketches he did back then, it's like seeing the work of a stranger. "Sorry," says Grantaire, shaking his head. "I've got nothing." Barrel seems to have trouble believing this. "I tried to talk to you, like, once a day, every day for a week," he says. "And you..." He waves his hand in front of his face. "Right through me. I'll be honest, man, I kind of assumed you were a racist." Grantaire frowns. "Oh no, that's not where I'm going with this," says Barrel. "If I still thought that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I could just never figure out, like, what I did." "What did you try to talk to me about?" Grantaire ventures. "Anything." Barrel rolls his pen around on the desk. "Good morning, do you know where the tempera paints are? That is a seriously badass screaming face." "I don't know, man," says Grantaire after a moment. He could leave it there, but... Barrel thought he was racist. Damn. "Look, tell you the truth. If I saw a dude in a wrestling shirt..." Barrel's pen veers towards the edge of his desk, and he snatches it up before it can hit the floor. "Shit," he says. "Yeah. Man, I loved wrestling, but wrestlers, not so much. There's a reason I quit, you know?" Maybe in 15 years Grantaire will get tired of thinking about that story. Maybe. "Did you quit, though?" he says. "Or did they throw you out for knocking the shit out of a guy?" "It was a public service," Barrel tells him. "Brett Andriaki? He graduated last year." Grantaire looks down at his hands. "Yeah. I was familiar with his work." Barrel clears his throat like he's going to say something comforting, and that's not what Grantaire needs. What he needs is to not need that. "If I'd only known," he says, "you could have had all my tempera paint." "Well, thanks, bro." Barrel seems to sense that this portion of the conversation is over, thank God. He grins. "But if you really want to thank me, tell Andros to listen to... well, you'll know it when you see it. It is so his speed, but..." He sighs. "Dude, like, vowed to never take my advice again after I told him to watch the South Park movie, so..." "I'll do my best," says Grantaire. He feels a sudden sharp regret for last night's smear campaign. "Wow, man, you're doing God's work." Barrel shrugs. "Had to be done. Hey, don't forget. Use your boyfriend powers if you need to." "Boyfriend powers? You know what I mean," says Barrel. "Levitation?" he guesses after a moment. "Come on." Barrel tugs the stack of CDs into his backpack. He's pretty clearly got a giant fucking soft spot for you. Just, you know, bat your eyelashes at him. "Nobody bats their eyelashes," says Grantaire, "other than, like, cartoon skunks. It's not a thing." "You'll figure it out," says Barrel with a grin. "I don't know, wiggle your butt at him?" Maybe Grantaire feels okay about defaming Barrel's name after all. If Barrel's mixes are an art form, he's in an abstract phase. Grantaire listens to Spyrock from Passing Period through the first half of Algebra, and it's the weirdest playlist he's ever heard. There's two tangos in a row, some overblown new wave song, rock, a jazz instrumental piece, something classical with a harpsichord, techno, rock again, country, and then what seems to be just straight up a chapter of an audiobook. It's easy to find the Enjolras mix. Songs for Tearing Shit Down is covered in crappy drawings of raised fists. So crappy, Grantaire can only identify them because they're labeled that way. He holds off playing it as long as he can, Every time Pete Taffney crosses the room, he makes a point of knocking into Grantaire's desk, until Grantaire wants to just flip over the whole thing and light it on fire. He queues up the CD instead. And lo, Barrel has come through for him. The very first track is so angry, and so determined, and so Enjolras, it's incredible. He wants to blare the song from the school's PA system, like he's in an 80s movie. Scratch that. He wants to live in a world where he could convince Enjolras to give it a chance, where Grantaire's eyelashes could have any effect. It's the same world where it means something that Enjolras held his hand all through lunch today, didn't even let go to drink his iced tea, just went through the contents of his lunch bag one-handed like it was natural. It's a nice place. This song is its national anthem, he decides, tapping his fingertips on his desk in time with the drums. When the track ends, he skips back to the beginning, and again, and again. It gets better every time. He wants to soak up the sound waves in his bones. He wants it to permanently change his heartbeat. The song isn't the national anthem after all. It's the whole country. Maybe that's what he'll do when he graduates. Leave the real world for everyone else to deal with. Crawl inside the song and build a house there, in the space right before the last chorus. Three things happen on Friday, all of them inevitable. Eponine shows up without lunch again. Someone in the hallway elbows Grantaire in the back so hard it bruises, and he gets into a big fight with Enjolras on the drive home. The lunch thing he saw coming. The elbowing could be an accident. The fight, though, Grantaire's got no excuse. Except that Enjolras was right. They are getting better at lying. It's easy to pretend, moment to moment, that the fact that they've learned how to smile at each other at a cafeteria table or across a hallway implies some kind of progress. Grantaire holds back his more assholish snark. Enjolras has started laughing at his jokes sometimes. Grantaire reminds himself it's a lie frequently. It's almost a mantra. Later that Tuesday, when Enjolras walked into World Myth and acted interested in the story of Atalanta, on Wednesday morning when Grantaire snuck into Enjolras' con econ class to hand him a note that just said, "What up, Chatterboots?" with a heart drawn around it, and Enjolras not only smiled, but slipped it into his front jean pocket. On Thursday when they held hands and it barely felt weird. This is not real. They walk out of the meeting together, joking about who is going to carry whose books, and the minute they're both in the van with the door shut, Enjolras is all business. "That thing you said on Tuesday," he says, "about being in remedial English or whatever." Tuesday was 3 long days ago. Grantaire thinks hard. "Okay. You know Fouillé is in regular lit, right?" Panic mode. Grantaire's palms sweat on the steering wheel. "Obviously he didn't. How would I know that?" "He didn't make it into advanced," says Enjolras, in carefully measured tones, "because he wasn't on the accelerated track in middle school. He moved around a lot, and it was paperwork nobody was willing to sign." "Wow," Grantaire thinks to himself. "You fucked this up so hard, man." "That sucks," he says out loud, trying to forestall whatever righteous lecture is coming. Enjolras just nods. "He actually went to the administration last year, trying to make the case to get him moved up. And do you know what they said?" Enjolras' eyebrows knit together. His mouth twists, bitter. "We don't think you're honors material." "Jesus," says Grantaire, rubbing a hand over his eyes. Fouillé's school before this one was in the city, where he walked through a metal detector every morning and carried all of his books to every class because the school couldn't afford enough lockers. Grantaire thinks about Fouillé's backpack, held together with duct tape, his gray, threadbare sneakers with their fraying laces. Somehow, Fouillé wakes up every day with the patience to read Moby Dick, to seek it out. Honors material. You'd think Grantaire would reach a point where people would stop surprising him with their shittiness, but the day hasn't come yet. "He was talking about starting a kind of book club," says Enjolras. "Or a combination book club and study group. They'd cover all the AP Lit books and study together, and then, at the end of the year, take the test." He glances sidelong at Grantaire. There's no rule saying you have to be in an AP class to get AP credit. That sounds like Fuyi, says Grantaire. There's a reason even Enjolras looks up to that kid. I told him you might be interested, says Enjolras. Grantaire stares at him. They're very lucky he hasn't taken the van out of park yet, or they'd probably both be dead. God, why? You were saying your class was too easy, Enjolras starts. I was saying it's good for naps. I like naps. Grantaire breathes through his nose. His hands are shaking. On some level, he knows he's being ridiculous. He breathes. He breathes. He clenches at the steering wheel until his knuckles go white. What's wrong with him? You ask questions when we talk about books, says Enjolras. Like this is evidence of something. When the truth is, Grantaire only asks questions because he knows he isn't smart. And at some point, he stopped caring about looking stupid. He's not about to... taking fucking tests, sweating over timed essays and smacking against the walls of his own ignorance. He has the sense he's supposed to say something to this. At least look Enjolras in the eye. There's an air freshener hanging limp from the rearview mirror. It's the cheap kind you find anywhere, shaped like a pine tree, formerly green but long ago bleached by the sun to a pale blue. It's fighting a losing battle against pretty much everything else in the van. He should probably just throw it away. I know you don't like talking about this, Enjolras is saying, but if the reason you stopped, I mean, in ninth grade, if people were giving you a hard time, you don't have to, I mean, obviously that's different now. On some level, he can see Enjolras's point. It's not like kids could hate him more for joining Fuyi's ridiculous crusade. Grantaire no longer has a reputation to protect. That's not why I... Grantaire starts, and Enjolras's mouth snaps closed. It's disorienting. It's not until Enjolras voluntarily shuts up that Grantaire realizes he doesn't actually know what he was going to say. Sometimes, at lunch, he feels like he's in one of those highlights puzzles. Circle what doesn't belong. Jeon's always reading 5 books. Combeferre seems to get stronger and brighter with each literary discussion, like Mario eating power mushrooms. Musichetta drops in jokes like, of course we all know who Sylvia Plath is. Enjolras gathers facts like a soldier gathering ammunition. Grantaire, at his very best, 5 years ago, at the absolute pinnacle of his achievement, had a stomach full of ulcers, panic attacks before each test, and insomnia so bad he regularly went 2 days without sleeping. Sometimes he would tiptoe into the living room as the sky outside was getting pink and sit at the foot of the trophy case, staring at all the ribbons and awards, trying to convince himself he was any relation to the smiling boy in the photos. I'm sure this is, like, hard for you guys to wrap your giant brains around, he gets out. But I never did this shit for fun. Tell Fuyi I wish him the best, but I've got zero interest in joining his little nerd parade. Tell him yourself, says Enjolras. You've got a mouth. Grantaire shakes his head. You're the one who fucking dragged me into this. Oh my god, Enjolras snaps. I'm sorry, okay? I should have asked you first, but Fuyi was looking for people, and just... His jaw works. It gets old, okay? Hearing you constantly call yourself dumb and complain about how bored you are, while you do absolutely nothing about it. It's one thing to know that nothing between them has changed. It's another to face it, out loud and stuck in the same van. Grantaire reminds himself it's for the better, a dose of reality, clean and stinging, like Neosporin on a cut. Well, says Grantaire, pointed, given that we're only pretending to like each other, maybe you can just suck it up and take one for the team. Enjolras says nothing. They ride all the way to his house in silence. Barrel's mix is still knocking around in the bottom of Grantaire's backpack. He'd been waiting to play Enjolras that first track. He hadn't even thought about how stupid it all was, sharing music like their friends. When Grantaire pulls into the driveway, he manages a hollow, "See you Monday." And Enjolras looks back over his shoulder, one hand on the door handle, incredulous. Tomorrow, he says slowly. Jolie's thing?
Right,
says Grantaire, to the sound of the car door slamming.
Oh, fucking joy.
Grantaire never got past page 4 of Dante's Inferno, but he skimmed the cliff notes at a bookstore last month, and he's pretty sure he's in a circle of hell right now. Not one of the heavy hitters. He still got some perspective. But definitely, you know, present. There's nothing objectively wrong with Jolie's basement. There's nothing even so bad about the couch Grantaire is trapped on. It can't help the part it has to play in this, the latest catastrophe of his life. The thing is, he almost didn't even sit next to Enjolras. When he climbed down the steps and into Jolie's rec room, Enjolras only managed a weird, strained smile from over the back of the couch. Grantaire didn't see the point in straining it past breaking point. He was all ready to stretch out on the carpet. But when Jolie finally stopped fluttering around him, Grantaire, you made it! You made it! Yes! As if his presence was like beating the upper level of some arcade game. Courfeyrac patted the middle cushion in invitation. And, well, what was Grantaire supposed to say? No thanks. My boyfriend's all right, but I prefer the cold hard embrace of the floor. At first, it wasn't that bad. It's a big couch, and by sprawling towards Courfeyrac, Grantaire could manage a comfortable 4-inch no-man's land between him and Enjolras. The problem started when Courfeyrac dragged Marius off the armrest where he'd been perching. Get off there, little buddy, you're gonna hurt yourself. And onto the cushions. And with that, a comfortable buffer became being mashed up together, Grantaire getting another noseful of that orangey scent. Which would be terrible already, but then, of course, Marius had to gallantly insist that there was plenty of space for Cosette as well. Hey, no worries. And in the scramble to make Cosette comfortable, Grantaire was nearly knocked to the ground, except Enjolras yanked him back by the waist, one hand brushing Grantaire's bare skin where his t-shirt had ridden up. Not that Grantaire wants to die or anything. And long story short, Grantaire is about half on the sofa, half on Enjolras' lap, and 100% wishing for death. Can you move over? Grantaire mutters to Courfeyrac, who just grins. Hey, it's cool. We're not at school. You two don't have to leave room for Jesus here. Courfeyrac is a good and kind and generous person, but every now and then, Grantaire hates him. Half of Grantaire's ass is on top of Enjolras' thigh. He can feel the warmth of skin through two layers of jeans. He can feel Enjolras breathing. And Enjolras has his hand on Grantaire's knee in a way that may look affectionate, but is really there for stability. Because Grantaire is so reluctant to properly transfer his weight, half his weight, that he keeps almost tipping onto the floor. Still, Enjolras' hand. Grantaire's knee. This is not a drill. They've watched 2 episodes of Jolie's show like this, with every molecule of Grantaire focused on keeping his balance, on sitting normally, breathing normally, willing his heartbeat into its usual rhythm, chasing his mind away from any thoughts that would freak him out or, oh God, please no, get him hard. It's safe to say Grantaire has 0 idea what the show is about. You guys okay over there? Courfeyrac asks, over the title sequence of the 3rd episode. Jolie insists they can't be skipped, and Grantaire realizes it must look almost as awkward as it feels, the sharp angles he's folded his body into, trying to take up as little space as possible. I'm fine, says Enjolras. You okay, honey? Honey? Coming from him? It somehow sounds more ridiculous than poodle hands. Grantaire swallows back a snicker. Is your back bugging you? Says Bahorel, from where he's lying on a footrest. Told you to get ice, man. Basic fucking bruise care. Enjolras freezes next to him, and also under him. Oh God, what is Grantaire's life? What happened to your back? Enjolras asks. It occurs to Grantaire that, in terms of vital information to share with the person you're pretending to date, physical damage might make the list. He sighs. Words can't even describe what little energy Grantaire has for another fight later about how he's a sloppy liar. Some asshole shoved me in the hallway, says Grantaire. Remember? He invents. I told you on the drive home from school. Mentally, He congratulates himself. Andros doesn't know how much Balrol knows, so he doesn't know how much he can bluff about it, which means there's nothing he can say. Case closed. Point dropped. Maybe Grantaire's not so stupid after all. The hand on Grantaire's knee tightens a fraction, then lets up. You didn't mention it left a bruise, Andros says, with a trace of frustration, like he's realized the genius of Grantaire's maneuver. Ha. Shh, says Jolie. Grantaire stares at the screen, glassy-eyed. He's not even sure this is the same show they were watching before. It's a western, but there are spaceships? It's sci-fi, but everyone has cows? Why are there no Asians in the future? Barrel whispers, which makes Musichetta give a loud, sudden laugh, which makes Grantaire almost slide off Andros's lap, which makes Andros move his hand up, until it's resting not against Grantaire's knee, but on his thigh. And Grantaire can't do this. He has lost every trace of his ability to do this. Jolie, where's your bathroom? He blurts out. Jolie digs up the remote and pointedly puts the TV on pause. Out the door, second door on your left, he says. And Grantaire beats a hasty retreat. Jolie's parents' bathroom feels older than the rest of the house. There's a black and white tile floor and an actual clawfoot tub. Grantaire curls up on the floor, resting his cheek against cool, solid porcelain. The wallpaper is patterned with the repeating image of three kittens sitting in a basket. He stares until it goes blurry, reconciling the lines of baskets into rows, columns, diagonals. 10 years from now, this will all be hilarious, he tells them. The words come easy, not because he agrees, but because it's something he used to hear a lot. Those kids who are bothering you? They're going to grow up to work at McDonald's. Or, all this won't seem like such a big deal when you're rich and successful. Things will be so much better in college. A teacher told him that once, when Grantaire was in middle school, as if college isn't functionally 1,000 years away to an 11-year-old. As if it's possible to believe in the future when the present is the bottom of a pit, and time is a shitty, inefficient bridge. Grantaire switches to the other side of his face, and reminds himself it's okay. Another minute and he can go back. Say his back hurts too much for the couch. Lie on his belly alone on the floor. He can do this. Someone knocks. One sec, he says, scrambling up to turn on the sink. Grantaire, what the hell? Says Enjolras. And Grantaire scrunches his face, sighs, and opens the door. Enjolras is standing in the middle of the hallway, posture tight, jaw clenched. And if they have this fight here, it will raise a lot of questions for their friends. Get in before someone sees you, Grantaire hisses. He's ready to yank in Enjolras by the shirt collar if he needs to, but Enjolras steps inside, no comment, and Grantaire pulls the door shut behind him. He's just wedged them together into a tiny enclosed space. A tiny enclosed space with kitten wallpaper. Grantaire would love to talk to his future self right now, because for the life of him, he can't see where he's gonna find the laughs in this situation. What? Grantaire starts, but Enjolras talks right over him. Did you really get beaten up at school? Okay, beaten up is ridiculous, says Grantaire. Someone pushed me in the back once. It was probably an accident. It's nothing. Really? Enjolras's nostrils flare. Because Balrol said it left a bruise. Grantaire scrubs a hand over his face. He would rather drown himself in the bathtub than deal with this. Balrol exaggerates, he points out. Is that, like, news to you? He tells jokes, says Enjolras. But I have to think he meant it because nothing about this is funny. One thing they can agree on, at least. I'm telling you it's fine. If Grantaire makes him angry enough, will Enjolras drop it? Smoke and mirrors, he thinks. He summons up his most annoying smile. Can't you take my word for it, Muffin Toes? A good fake relationship is built on trust. But Enjolras doesn't take the bait, which, come to think of it, is a bad sign. Prove it, he says. What? A muscle in Enjolras' jaw twitches. If it's nothing, I'll be able to tell. Show me.
Dude.
Grantaire tries to snort, but his mouth has gone dry.
I'm not stripping for you.
It's aiming for contemptuous. He can feel that the curl of his lip is all wrong.
You answer the door in your underwear, says Enjolras,
and Grantaire knows what this is. Knows that it's only Enjolras trying to catch him out on a lie. But certain parts of his body are very aware of what it sounds like. Is the room suddenly 90 degrees? Enjolras must take his silence for the unconditional surrender it kind of is, because he only says, "Do you know who did it?" Grantaire shakes his head. "Do you know who might have done it?"
What kind of question is that?
Yeah, half the fucking school. Grantaire doesn't even think before he says it, but Enjolras goes still.
Why? Have people been harassing you? He says slowly. Are you surprised?
Grantaire can't get over it, this endless well of indignation. If righteous fury could power cars, he'd have clean energy all figured out. I assume they've said shit to you. Did you think they'd spare me because of my charming fucking personality?
People have made comments. Or tried to, says Enjolras. Nobody's touched me.
If it gets physical, that's serious.
Has anything happened besides this?
Grantaire's not about to divulge the saga of the nail in his tire, or the penis on his desk.
Maybe it's none of your business.
Really? Enjolras bites out, voice crackling with sarcasm. You don't think it looks kind of odd that the person you're supposedly dating has to find the shit out from Barrel?
Oh, no, says Grantaire.
No, you do not get to lecture me right now on being convincing. Do you have any idea how suspicious it looks that you followed me to the fucking bathroom?
I told them I had to make a phone call, Enjolras counters.
It's Grantaire's turn to be incredulous.
Seriously, dude? Okay, let's review. I leave for the bathroom. You suddenly remember that you had a very important call. We're gone for exactly the same length of time. And then we resurface 20 minutes later.
They are absolutely going to realize something's up. I hope you're prepared to explain to them how we're totally not fighting.
Shit.
He rests both hands on his head. On his hair, actually. He's not sure where his hat is. It has wisely fled the scene. I mean, fucking best case scenario? They assume we slipped away to make out. There's a pause. The room feels even smaller than before. Grantaire contemplates flushing himself into the ocean, like a dead goldfish. Logically, he knows this wouldn't work, but the toilet is right there.
It's tempting.
It probably is, says Enjolras.
What?
The best-case scenario. Enjolras looks thoughtful. Maddeningly thoughtful.
Can you think of a better story?
It's a terrible story, says Grantaire, automatic.
They won't buy it.
Why not? Says Enjolras.
We're dating.
Because you'd sooner tongue-kiss a paper shredder than touch mouths with me, Grantaire manfully does not say.
Okay,
he says instead. Think about this. Why do your friends think we're together?
Because we told them, and for whatever reason, they bought it.
Okay. But if we'd actually left to mack on each other, we wouldn't admit it. Think how that would look, walking back in like, oh hey, what did we miss while we were totally fooling around in Jolie's parents' bathroom? We'd have to, like, put out signs, while making it look like we weren't putting out signs. Before, it worked because they took our word for it. Here, we'd have to rely on, like, fucking subtext. He gestures between them, the tight line of Enjolras' jaw, the tension in Grantaire's shoulders that hasn't fully settled for days. Do you see the problem here?
That's easy to fake, though, says Enjolras.
Mess up your hair. Grantaire obediently runs one hand through his hair, feeling stupid. Especially because Enjolras is watching him do it. And because, judging from his expression, Grantaire somehow didn't do it right. Enjolras shakes his head, fingers twitching at his sides as if fighting the urge to just skip the middleman and dishevel Grantaire's hair correctly. More than that.
Do I need to explain to you how making out works?
Says Grantaire. Because it doesn't generally involve,
Are you trying to give yourself a hickey? Andaros has moved in front of the mirror, pinching at his collarbone with a determined frown. There is no way in hell that's going to work, Grantaire tells him. Have you tried? Says Andaros, in what would be a withering tone, except this moment is so idiotic that his voice couldn't wither anything. No, but if it was that easy, don't you think every pathetic 8th grade boy on the planet would be rolling up to middle school covered in marks? Andaros rolls his eyes. Are you going to just stand there and criticize, or... What's the alternative? Grantaire breaks in. What, man? Help give you a hickey? Because I only know how to do it the standard way, and I can't imagine you're gonna... His lungs are burning because he is holding his breath, he realizes. He takes a deep exhale. Andaros doesn't even look up right away, focused on his reflection, scrutinizing the unmarked skin of his own clavicle. Okay, says Andaros. Grantaire knows he's staring. He doesn't think he can be blamed. What? Okay, Andaros repeats. That didn't work. It would sell our story better than maybe anything else. So if you're offering... Well, that's it. Grantaire has lost his mind. He's officially gone crazy, and there's nobody to witness it except for the wallpaper kittens. Look, says Grantaire, I don't care either way. But if you've never done anything with anyone, maybe getting a hickey from someone you don't even like isn't the best place to... Are you looking out for my honor right now? Andaros asks. It's not an issue. I didn't have any grand ideas about my first time. A corner of his mouth twitches, and Grantaire realizes belatedly he's being quoted. Anyway, it's not sex. It's not even kissing. It's letting someone bite you, one time, kind of slowly. I've never understood the appeal. From Grantaire's very limited experience, this is doing the act a disservice, but he can't think of a way to say, like, this is gonna involve a lot more sucking than you seem to realize, dude, without sounding incredibly creepy. And it would be convincing. He can see that. The longer they stay in this room, the more they're going to need a cover story. If you're sure, he hears himself say. I'm sure, says Andaros. His brow furrows with sudden concern. Are you all right with this? I mean, don't feel pressured or... I'm fine, says Grantaire, trying to smirk. I mean, I hear it's just biting someone, one time, kind of slowly. So how do we, Andaros makes a vague gesture. Grantaire peers up at him. There are a couple of ways he could reach Andaros's neck with his teeth, but he can't think of anything that wouldn't involve either pressing their bodies flush together, or making it very obvious he's trying not to. This whole enterprise is screamingly dumb, but it's still his mouth on Andaros's skin, and he can't trust his dick to remember what a bad idea this is. Sit on the edge of the bathtub, he says. Andaros squints at him. Dude, I'm not doing this on my tiptoes. Fair, says Andaros, shuffling over and taking a seat. The logical thing would be to straddle his lap, but even thinking those words is too much. Instead, he steps to the right, bracing one knee on the edge of the tub and the other leg against the side. Andaros gives him an expectant look through his lashes, and it sends his balance wobbling. This is going to be an issue, he thinks. Can I, put my hands on your shoulders? He asks. Andaros nods. Grantaire lays a palm on each deltoid. Maybe, if he keeps it clinical in his head, he won't go insane somehow. That's got to be the key. Stay removed. The clavicle. The trapezius. The sternocleidomastoid muscle. It's tissue and bone. Like anyone's tissue and bone. A blank canvas. The neck of Andaros's t-shirt has twisted to one side. Grantaire straightens it back out. He picks a spot and sets the pad of his thumb on it. The skin is smooth and warm. What was he expecting? Feathers? I'm thinking here, he says. If that's okay. Close to the collar so it looks like we'd tried to hide it. Makes sense, says Andaros. Grantaire can feel the rise and fall of each breath. He's no expert, but it seems shallow. You know you don't have to do this, right? says Grantaire. Enjolras rolls his eyes. Yeah, I know. Like, if we start, and you change your mind, we can always... I know, says Enjolras. Okay, as long as you know. Under his hands, Enjolras' pulse is racing. Grantaire can relate. For very different reasons, but still. He rubs his thumb in a small circle. Hey, he says, as gently as he can. It's okay. Seriously. It may feel weird for a second, but if I do this right, there won't be, like, pain. I'm fine, Enjolras insists. And maybe his glare would be convincing otherwise, but he can't bluster his way past basic biology. Dude, my hand's by your neck. I can feel your heartbeat, says Grantaire, and the beat in question kicks into triple time. Enjolras' eyes widen. It's okay, Grantaire says again. If you're nervous, or whatever. I know everyone acts like they've done this shit a million times, but most of them are lying, so... Have you? Enjolras clears his throat. Done it before, I mean. It's lose-lose. If Grantaire plays up his own cluelessness, that's not exactly reassuring. If he acts like he does this every day, it only serves to make Enjolras even more self-conscious about his own lack of experience. The truth. Yeah, but not as much as I'd like people to think. Would disgust him on a couple of levels. Of course, Grantaire says instead. A million times. It earns him a snort. Enjolras tilts his neck to the side. Helpful of him, Grantaire thinks distantly. The motion is enough to make Grantaire's mouth go dry. You can do this, he tells himself. It's not actually that difficult. Just lean forward and put your mouth on his skin. He can't move. Problems? Says Enjolras. Sorry, it's just super weird to, like, out of nowhere, chow down like a vampire. Isn't that how it usually works? Grantaire bites his lip. Usually it's part of a bigger thing. And there's kissing first and stuff, so it's more of a... You kind of work up to it? This is not a line of thought he needs right now. Enjolras must not either, judging from his heartbeat. Okay, like, just so we're super, super clear, you can stop me at any time, Oh my god, Grantaire, just bite me already, Enjolras snaps. Grantaire can't keep it together. He laughs. Wow, man. Feels like all the romance has gone out of this relationship. Enjolras huffs out a breath, and Grantaire sees his chance. He swoops down and sets mouth to clavicle, applies teeth because there's no time for finesse, and if he overthinks this, he will spend the rest of his life hovering 6 inches away, helplessly breathing in the smell of citrus. The breath cuts off into a gasp. Grantaire jerks away. Oh shit, man, did I hurt you? No, says Enjolras. I was surprised, but it's fine. Just, what do I do with my hands? He tips his head up, eyes wide, painfully earnest. Of course, this is Enjolras. Painfully earnest could be the name of his autobiography. But it's a striking look on him. He looks like, well, like a nervous teenager about to fumble his way through his first sexual encounter. But one that was worried about getting it right. It's sweet. Would be sweet. Grantaire's chest clenches in a way he doesn't like. I don't care, he gets out. And when he leans in and puts his lips on Enjolras' collarbone, it has the added benefit of hiding his face. It's trickier this time. Enjolras' palms resting on the back of Grantaire's head, almost too light to feel. Grantaire tries to be less abrupt, but going gently means that, for a long moment, he's left mouthing against skin in something way too close to a kiss. Enjolras swallows. Grantaire can't see it, but he can feel the muscles working. Thyrohyoid. Sternohyoid. Omohyoid. What would it be like to have someone sucking on your collarbone when your body is only at all interested in 5 people on the planet? Uncomfortable, he guesses. Awkward. Boring, maybe. Get this over with. There's a terrible equation at play. The more considerate he is, the longer they're stuck here.
He brings in his teeth gradually, tries to increase the suction in slow, careful degrees. Not lingering, not romantic, just, he doesn't want to be an asshole about it. Andros holds himself very still, but this close, Grantaire can hear each inhale and exhale, feel the slight hitch in his breathing. He's never been so aware of his hands, the awkward twist of his body against the tub, the way sounds seem to echo in the small space. The problem is, the combination of body heat, breathy noises, and the fact that his tongue is on Andros's skin, warm and clean-tasting, is enough to make the dumb animal parts of his brain sit up and take notice. It is going to be a real issue if they don't move things along. Grantaire digs in his teeth and sucks harder, and Andros makes a quiet, shocked "ah" that, out of context, is going to haunt Grantaire's fantasies forever. God, he hopes it doesn't hurt or anything, because he's starting to suspect Andros wouldn't call this off if it did. As if making his point, Andros chokes back what sounds like another gasp. Grantaire slides one hand off his shoulder and rubs it along his arm, soothing. The hands in his hair sweep up and down Grantaire's scalp in steady motions, and if focusing on something else helps Andros to ignore the teeth in his neck, Grantaire's glad he can provide that service. He wishes he wasn't quite so aware of how good it feels, the synapses in his brain singing at each brush of fingers. He inches his hips away and keeps going. There's nothing else to do. It's terrible, and it's awkward, and it's more than a little uncomfortable. But in a weird way, it's almost relaxing, too. If he's honest, he loses track of time. Says Andros eventually. And the way the vibrations buzz against Grantaire's lips means that Grantaire doesn't process the words at first. Is it enough, do you think? Grantaire pulls his mouth away. The sound is wet and loud, and despite his absolute best efforts, he's hard. Grantaire regrets every event in human history that led to this moment, from the invention of the video camera to his own birth, to the hiring of whoever designed Jolie's parents' basement. He ducks and drops down onto the edge of the bathtub, hunching in on himself protectively until he can get his breath back, and let the situation in his pants subside. "Did it work?" says Andros, almost in his ear. Grantaire hadn't thought to check. What is he doing? He cranes his neck, the rest of his body angled safely away. The mark is lurid against Andros's skin, bright red, shiny, like a smudge of paint Grantaire put there. "It worked," he confirms. Unthinking, he wipes at the spot with his thumb. Andros flinches. "Sorry." "It's fine," Andros says, but his eyes are somewhere above Grantaire's head, tracing the rows of kittens and baskets along the walls. Grantaire more meant, "Sorry for the way that I will definitely, definitely jerk off later thinking about some of those sounds you made," but he appreciates the out. He nods. There's no reason to. Andros isn't looking. They sit side by side, staring straight ahead. Grantaire can't imagine what he's supposed to say. All he wants to do is apologize again. He's not even sure why. Grantaire counts to 10, and then he can't take it anymore. He knows he's going to start talking before he even knows what it will be about. It's like riding a raft off a waterfall. Do you think each cluster of kittens is supposed to be the same kittens? Like, are we seeing one moment over and over again? Or are we surrounded by a bunch of clones? He says for some reason, out loud, of his own free will. It's not sorry, but that's about the best thing that can be said for it. "Is this an art thing?" says Andros. "What?" "Like, a theory, or... Jean said you knew a lot about art." "I don't, dude." He taps the sole of his shoe against the tile, staccato. There's stuff I like and don't like, but it's not... like, knowledge." "You hate it when people assume you don't know something," says Andros. "But you hate it when they assume you do, too." Grantaire closes his eyes, tips back his head. "Remember when I said you weren't my shrink? Remember that? Because I do. It stuck with me, somehow." There's a second where he thinks maybe they're going to fight again. But Enjolras just says, "How long do you think before it's okay to go back?" It's a fair question. He has no idea how much time has passed. 5 minutes? An hour? He should have checked his phone before they started. "In a bit," he says, mostly to the kittens. He's gotten his body under control for now, but he could use a few more seconds before he has to see Enjolras, or contend with the mark sitting there stark on his collarbone. He traces a thumb along the crease of his own elbow, which only brings him back to the thought of rubbing Enjolras's arm. He's not sure why he did that. It's not like anyone will be able to tell. Because that is, after all, the point of the operation. He frowns. "What?" says Enjolras. "Do I need to do anything? To make it seem like I've been..." He flails one hand around, in a way that he hopes can somehow get him off the hook for using words. "I mean, is there even time to..." Enjolras makes a choked-off noise that Grantaire's mind tries not to move into a new, dirtier context. "You know," he says at last, "you're good." Grantaire's not sure he likes the sound of that. He pulls himself to his feet, steps up to the bathroom mirror, and tries not to stare. Because Grantaire looks wrecked. His lips are very red, which, in retrospect, makes sense. His cheeks are flushed. And his hair? There are no words. Well, maybe there are a couple. "What did you do?" he manages. It occurs to him that the impromptu scalp massage might have been less Enjolras trying to take his mind off what was going on, and more about Enjolras' stubbornness about the proper way to mess up hair, his inability to let any argument, no matter how trivial or harebrained, go. Grantaire rakes the curls down with his fingers, but they spring back up. "And of course," he thinks wildly, "of course his hair obeys Enjolras and not him." "What did you do?" he says again. "Seriously, do I need to walk you through the steps of making out with someone? Explain to me, in your mind, how this would even..." "Calm down," says Enjolras. And Grantaire takes a deep breath, because if Enjolras is telling him to chill, the wheels have officially come off. "And I don't see the problem. We're kissing. Presumably my hands are in your hair. It could happen," he adds. Because it turns out Enjolras has a talent for reciting Grantaire's sappiest, most private daydreams like a grocery list. It all sounds so absurd under the harsh bathroom lighting. Grantaire could cry. He really could. "This isn't... making out does not do this to hair." He jabs a finger at his head. "The fuck are we supposed to say? Oh, hey guys, what's up? Yeah, we just fooled around for a while, and then Grantaire got mildly electrocuted. No big deal." "Nobody is going to jump to conclusions from that," says Enjolras. "And you can fix your hair when you get home. Why is this such a..." "Because it's fucking ridiculous," Grantaire hisses. "Here," Enjolras says, calmly. "I'll fix it now." Grantaire shakes his head. He's not about to roll that dice again. "Oh, come on," says Enjolras. "Let me just..." He reaches a hand toward Grantaire's head. Grantaire shivers at the memory of fingers on his scalp, and flattens himself against the door with a thump. In tandem, from the other side of the door, someone knocks. Hey, Marius's voice filters in. "Grantaire, are you okay?" "Peachy," says Grantaire. "Because you were gone for a long time," Marius continues. "And we started to get worried. Have you seen Enjolras?" He sounds slightly hesitant. "I thought he'd be in the hallway, but I can't find him, and I don't think he..." "Nope, haven't seen him," Grantaire sing-songs to the door, panic bubbling into his voice. "So you're really okay, then?" says Marius. "Yeah," says Grantaire. "Yeah, totally. No emergency or anything?" "Nope," Grantaire tells him. "Not at all." "Great," says Marius. There's a 4-second pause. "Because I kind of have to use the bathroom?" "Oh, right. That's totally fair," says Grantaire. "I totally get that. It is so understandable." Enjolras throws him a wild look. Grantaire shakes his head helplessly. Anjelos inclines his own head towards the door, with purpose, and Grantaire registers that, in among the many lies they're telling today, they want people to know they've been alone together in here. They just don't want people to know they want people to know. And suddenly, this story is one set of identical twins away from being a madcap comedy of errors. With the air of pulling off a band-aid, Anjelos reaches over, grabs the knob, and whisks the door open. Marius stares at them. They stare back.
"I found Anjelos," says Grantaire weakly.
Marius nods. He keeps nodding. He's stuck there. He can't actually enter the bathroom because Grantaire is frozen in the doorway.
"Well," says Anjelos, too loudly, "we should, get going. Don't want to miss another episode."
He tugs at Grantaire's forearm, pulling them into the hallway.
"Bye, Marius," he throws over his shoulder. "Enjoy the bathroom."
Marius is still nodding as he reaches for the door. It takes him 2 tries to shut it correctly. "I think we broke Marius," says Anjelos in a low voice, as they head back to the rec room. Grantaire gives him a shell-shocked look.
"Enjoy the bathroom," he repeats.
"What?
That's what you said to him just now."
Anjelos stops. "Oh God," he says. "I did." He scrubs a hand over his face.
"Fuck."
A corner of his mouth twitches. Grantaire's not sure if he's holding back laughter or in the middle of a seizure.
"Enjoy the bathroom," says Grantaire, slowly this time.
Anjelos snorts. He presses his lips into a thin line, but the same corner twitches again. Grantaire can feel the laugh bubbling up like it's in his own chest, that burn behind the sternum. He wants to pull it out into the open.
"Enjoy the bathroom," Grantaire says again, and somehow that's what it takes.
Anjelos slumps against the wall and does something that could nearly be described as giggling.
"Oh my God," Anjelos chokes out.
"Why did I say those words, that order? What was even..."
"On the plus side, this is Marius we're talking about," says Grantaire. "There's a chance he didn't pick up on it. Awkward is where he lives. It's like, does a fish notice water?"
Anjelos wipes at his eyes, still fighting to get his breath back.
"Say something nice about Marius."
"What?"
"He's on your side," says Anjelos, and Grantaire is too tired to argue against a point he actually agrees with.
"He means well."
"That doesn't count. I already said that. Something else."
Grantaire pushes himself for another revelation about Marius. Nothing feels significant. Marius doesn't understand irony. He's good at German. They've been in the same school district since kindergarten, but for a long time, Grantaire only knew him as that kid who doesn't have parents. Marius's grandpa came to pick him up from middle school play rehearsal once, all bushy white eyebrows and palpable lack of interest in talking to kids. Grantaire remembers trying to convince himself he wasn't afraid of an old man, and failing pretty hard. The fact that Marius went through a whole childhood of that and emerged without being noticeably fucked up is nothing short of incredible. Grantaire's parents were supportive for years, and even so, he's a mess. He swallows.
"Dude's got a great nose," says Grantaire. "I mean, he's good-looking in general, but he is just killing it with that nose."
"Come on," says Anjelos. It's a reprimand, but not an, "Oh God, Grantaire, shut the hell up." It's more of a, "Corfirok, stop hugging people so we can start the meeting already." Or maybe anything is bound to sound less confrontational after a giggle fit.
"Dead serious," Grantaire tells him. "Why do people only write love songs about eyes and lips? Have you seen those nostrils? They're intense. All full of, like, passion. And probably nose hairs, but..."
That corner of Anjelos' mouth quirks again, and for a second, Grantaire feels infinitely powerful, like he could scale a mountain or swim across the Pacific, or make Anjelos laugh a second time. A door opens behind them.
The rec room, right.
Bosaway sticks his head out.
"Thought I heard voices," he says. "Did you guys get lost, or..." Everything's fine, Andras says, turning away. They've made it just inside the room when Courfeyrac looks them up and down and starts to laugh. Heads turn in their direction. Judging from the expressions on the faces peering up at them, Andras's hickey is very visible, and Grantaire did not manage to fix his hair. Guys, says Courfeyrac, when I said, don't leave room for Jesus, I didn't actually mean... It's not, Grantaire says. How was your phone call, Andras? Jeanne asks sweetly from a chair. Great, says Andras. It went well. Good conversation, says Musichetta, waggling her eyebrows. Jolie and Bossuet chuckle on either side of her. Somehow, it doesn't matter that it's all a sham, that this is exactly what they're going for. Grantaire's face is burning anyway. Here, says Cosette, reaching up to hand Enjolras something. You left your phone on the couch. She looks like she's fighting valiantly to keep a straight face. On some level, Grantaire appreciates the effort. Enjolras accepts the phone with as much grace as he likely can. Thanks, he says, gruff. Musichetta, on the other hand, is not fighting to keep a straight face at all. So, this phone call, she says. Did you make it with your mind, or... Are we ever going to watch the rest of the show? Says Jolie mournfully. And in that moment, Grantaire could hug him. Grantaire watches the rest of the show on the floor, leaning against a footrest. Enjolras is curled up next to him, an arm wrapped around Grantaire's middle. And for once, Grantaire doesn't go into panic mode. He's used all his panic for the day. At some point, Enjolras looks over, as if to check on him, and just to be obnoxious, Grantaire rests his head against Enjolras's shoulder. It's okay, he reminds himself. Enjolras could call it off if he wanted to. He doesn't, and after the steaming pile of garbage that is the past 2 hours, Grantaire is resolved not to feel bad about letting himself enjoy it for a few hours. The warmth of another person's body, the feel of Enjolras's hair against his cheek. Grantaire watches the rest of the show, and absorbs literally none of it. What did you think? Jolie asks him later, as everyone is milling around upstairs making their goodbyes. Enjolras is going with Musichetta, Cosette, and Combeferre to work on her presentation for speech class. Grantaire is starting to suspect that, besides the imaginary dates, Enjolras' social life revolves around being dragged to other people's birthday parties and working on group projects. Your carpet is really comfy, says Grantaire. About the show! Jolie drops down onto a kitchen chair. In the window behind him, the sun has long since set. They spent a whole day on whatever that was, and nobody seems disgruntled about it. Grantaire wonders what he missed. Can me and Corf get a ride with you? Jeanne asks. His mom drove us here, but she's probably asleep now. Grantaire nods. It was great, Jolie, he says.
Yes, it was!
Jolie punches the air.
Who's your favorite character?
Well, fuck. Oh, man, says Grantaire weakly. How could I possibly... choose. He hasn't had a line reading that shitty since elementary school, but Jolie beams and holds one fist out.
Knuckles, dude! It's amazing, right?
He says, and Grantaire fist bumps him because Grantaire is not a monster. Sometimes I'm like, well, he's my favorite, obviously. But then it's like, wait, what about him? What about her? What about her, you know? It's like asking me to pick my favorite episode. Although, I think maybe I like the 8th one the best. He kicks his feet, tracing figure eights over the tile with the tip of his cane. Oh, frick, though. That opening one gets me every time. What about you? Pretending to know what the hell Jolie is talking about is one lie too many for Grantaire. I think I'd have to see them again to decide, he invents. Could I borrow the DVDs? Jolie beams. It's a good thing they drop off Jeanne first, because he seems to only have a vague sense of where he lives. His landmarks are all trees and bushes and houses painted an unusual shade of beige, useless in the dark. They get lost for half an hour, driving in ever larger circles. Corphyrok's the one to spot the turnoff. Hey, isn't your house on Foster? That sounds familiar. And they get Jeon home with minutes to spare before his curfew sets in. Tell me you know what street you live on, says Grantaire, as Corphyrok climbs into the front seat.
Can do,
Corphyrok tells him. Hey, so, Hearing Corphyrok hesitate about anything feels like cause for concern. Grantaire gives him the time it takes to back out of the driveway, and then turns to ask,
What's up, man?
Corphyrok is frowning.
Are you doing okay?
He says.
I mean, I thought I heard you saying someone knocked you over in the hallway?
Oh my god, it's fine, says Grantaire. I took an elbow to the back.
What is people's deal? Does it seem like I can't handle it?
Course not, man. Just... Corphyrok lets out a long breath.
Do you regret it ever? Coming out?
Not everything is about you, Grantaire, Eponine said once.
God,
he needs those words tattooed on the inside of his eyelids. Corphyrok has other shit on his mind. That was the whole point of this exercise in the first place.
No, he says, heartfelt as he can.
But you're getting shit for it. And I know Andros is getting shit. Is it really worth being afraid all the time?
Don't fuck this up, he thinks desperately.
Corphyrok is good enough at reading people to know if Grantaire says something too far out of character. If he smiles and says it's all sunbeams, it will look suspect. He needs an optimistic version of himself.
What does that even mean?
I mean, it's not like it was a party before, either, says Grantaire at last. But then it was, would my friends be okay if they knew who I really was? What if people find out anyway? How long am I going to have to hide this? The words are easier to find than he thought they'd be, but harder to say. He breaks off, keeps his eyes on the road.
I guess, says Corphyrok quietly. I don't know.
You guys are really brave.
I'm not, says Grantaire, with too much force. Course correction time.
He schools his face into something calmer.
But if I'm going to be afraid either way, might as well have a little control over it, you know?
He darts a sideways glance at Corphyrok. Might as well get the benefit of dating this awesome fucking guy who somehow likes me back or something.
Grantaire tries not to say it too pointedly.
And we know our friends have our backs. That's not nothing.
But watching someone you like put up with all that...
Well, yeah, says Grantaire. But it's Enjolras. Not like he blended in before, you know.
Corphyrok says nothing.
Too harsh?
Grantaire scrambles to soften it up.
I don't know, dude. I like him so much that, I guess, if he thinks he can deal with it, I trust him? Or respect his choice, or something. And we get to... I mean, we've got each other's backs on this whole other level, he says, wistfulness creeping into his voice like ivy. Enjolras should have a person like that someday.
That's what she said, Corphyrok mutters, automatic.
Then,
still though,
it's got to suck.
Sometimes it does. But most things suck some of the time. At least this way, the bastards don't always win.
Corphyrok rests his feet on the dashboard, meditative.
Also,
probably nice to be able to take a stand against the man just by kissing a cute guy.
Probably, yeah.
Grantaire forces himself not to sigh.
It's pretty great, he says instead.
Fortunately, Corphyrok seems too lost in thought to notice how hollow it comes out. In the little slice of road illuminated by headlights, the dotted yellow line rolls towards them, into view and then out of sight under the van, over and over.
Speaking of which, says Corphyrok cheerfully, like the past few minutes never happened. Okay, eh? Please don't hook up in someone else's bathroom again. Gross. But B?
Enjolras gets all blushy and awkward any time I try to ask him how it's going with you two. So can I just say it's good to know you guys are getting some action?
Why would you ask him about that? Grantaire blurts out.
He has the sudden, horrible realization that
He and Andaros might need to meet up and make sure they're on the same page with their imaginary sex life.
To give him advice, says Corfirok, breezy.
You remember how shoddy your school sex ed was, right? Here's a diagram of a dick. Here are some venereal diseases. Don't get teen pregnant. The end.
I promise nobody's getting pregnant, says Grantaire.
Good. No offense, but you'd be hilarious as parents.
Kids make Grantaire nervous. They're so fragile. There's so many ways to screw it up. Say the wrong thing, and congratulations, you've ruined a childhood. Gavroche is the one exception, and that's because he's fucking indomitable.
Neither of them say much for the rest of the ride. Grantaire breaks the silence a few minutes later, when they roll up to Corfirok's driveway.
You get that the having our backs thing works both ways, right? Like, if you, or if someone you cared about needed it. I mean, in the end, it's your call what you want to do. You and whoever else. But if you need it, it's pretty obvious your weird nerdy justice club would do anything for you.
Aw, says Corfirok.
I love you too, man.
He wraps Grantaire into a rib-crunching hug. Grantaire waits in the car until he sees Corfirok unlock the front door and slip safely inside. There's some big feeling behind his eyes, in his chest, in the joints of his arms and his fingers, but he doesn't know what. He can't even tell if he's happy or sad, just that there's a lot of it. He grabs Bowerell's mix and cues up the first song for the drive home. For the time being, it's the only cure-all he knows.
Hey, says Grantaire. I thought of another thing about Marius.
It's Monday, after the meeting. They're in Grantaire's van again, and mostly he just needs some way to fill the silence. For once, Andaros doesn't have any corrections or admonishments. There's no reason they have to talk at all, but it's better to give his nervous energy some focus. Why is he even nervous? Nothing's going wrong. Maybe that's enough. It's certainly out of the ordinary.
Maybe he needs to keep his mind occupied so he doesn't get them into a car accident, turning to look at the mark still only half hidden by Andaros' shirt.
Grantaire can't remember how long hickeys usually last, but he hopes it fades soon because his self-control is just not up to this. The other kids have to have noticed it. If they were on slightly better or much worse terms, Grantaire would ask Andaros if anyone said anything. Instead, they've got their tenuous, half-unspoken ceasefire, and Grantaire will say anything to keep his brain busy.
What? His thing with Cosette.
Eponine's feelings aside, Grantaire is man enough to admit the reality of the situation.
It's cute. I mean, totally gross and annoying also, but it's like a puppy shitting on your rug. You can't hate it either.
Next to him, there's the sound of Andaros shifting around restlessly, plucking at his seatbelt.
What thing with Cosette?
Seriously, dude? Says Grantaire.
The thing where they're 100% in love?
Huh.
Are they? Says Andaros, who is supposed to be the smart one here.
Grantaire doesn't even know what to say for a moment.
Yes? In a super obvious way?
He can almost hear Andaros's forehead scrunch up.
I mean, they're friends, he says, but I don't think they're dating. Yeah, well, what does that mean? Grantaire points out. Look at us. We're dating and we don't even tolerate each other most of the time. If they aren't together, are you sure they're interested in each other? Says Andaros. Please. Every conversation they have is a Disney movie. Big, wide-eyed faces. The hum of destiny all around them. Squirrels and birds flitting about, singing up a storm.
Oh, Cosette, I like the postal service too. How incredibly significant!
Andaros snorts. Sorry, I must have missed the part where they bonded over the U.S. mail system. No, dude, the band. The postal service.
Several more seconds of fidgeting noises.
Are you messing with me right now? That's the name of an actual music group? How could he not know this? Says Grantaire, feeling suddenly defensive. The postal service. They're a mainstream band. You've definitely heard them.
I haven't, says Enjolras, and Grantaire really hoped they were beyond this kind of knee-jerk contrariness. "No, come on, man," he says. "They're on the radio. Their stuff's on TV. They've got that one song that everyone on the planet knows." "Not everyone, apparently." "You've heard the song," Grantaire insists. "If you're not actually a Martian, you've heard the song." "Sorry," says Enjolras. "You'd know it if you heard it." "Could you sing a few bars?" "Whatever. Grantaire can totally do this. He sings in his car all the goddamn time." He swallows. "It's the one, it goes like, 'I am thinking it's a sign that the freckles in our eyes are mirror images, and when we kiss, they're perfectly aligned.'" Without any backing track to protect him, his voice feels almost delicate and airless fan, and several shades too honest. There's a pause. "That's a very short song," says Enjolras. "Fuck you. Obviously there's more," says Grantaire. "This doesn't sound familiar at all? Really? How could I tell from that little bit? It was like 10 seconds. Grantaire sighs. It's a decent point. He sings the next couple of lines and glances expectantly at Enjolras, who frowns, thoughtful. "I don't know, maybe?" Grantaire takes them through the end of the first verse. He's not sure why this is so important to him, except, at this point, the thought of enduring this level of humiliation for no reason is unbearable. It's a much sappier song than he remembers. His eyes are burning, and he's starting to feel very weird about the whole thing. But when he stops, Enjolras says, "What's the chorus like?" "If I'm going to recognize any part of the song, it's probably the chorus." And so Grantaire takes a deep breath. "They will see us waving from such great heights. Come down now, they'll say," he sings. "But everything looks perfect from far away. Come down now, but we'll stay." He clears his throat. "Come on, dude. Tell me this is ringing a bell for you," he says. "It might be," Enjolras hazards. "I don't know. Maybe if you sang the next verse?" Grantaire takes advantage of being at a stop sign to look over at him, where something smile-like is pushing at the corner of his mouth. Then he remembers. Jolie's basement hallway. The look on Enjolras' face as he struggled to hold in a laugh. Everything comes together, like solving a riddle. "Oh my god," says Grantaire slowly. "You're fucking with me." Enjolras bites his lip. "What makes you think?" "No, you are. Oh my god. You are 100% fucking with me." For some reason, it's the best thing Grantaire's ever heard. This isn't Enjolras being combative or trying to prove a point. He's giving Grantaire a hard time for the sheer fun of it. It's like something Barrel would do. Hell, it's like something Grantaire would do. Relief surges through him, and not just because he doesn't have to sing any more of that stupid song. "I wasn't trying to make you feel foolish," says Enjolras. That's the word he uses, foolish. Like they're in Little House on the Prairie or something. "Nah, man, it's cool, I get it," Grantaire says. "I know how fucking with people works. It's kind of my wheelhouse." "But it's a real song?" says Enjolras, as if to check. "Yep. By the post office." "Postal service," Grantaire corrects. Why use a name that's already being used for something else? That's idiotic. Tell that to the Beatles, says Grantaire. Enjolras shakes his head. Grantaire's still driving, and he doesn't look over or anything. He just knows Enjolras is shaking his head. The Beatles don't count. They spell their name with an A. It's a pun? Good lord, it is a pun. Grantaire feels very stupid. The postal service, though. Those words already have a meaning. It's like calling your band Hamburgers. There's no point. Are you kidding? Says Grantaire. Hamburgers would be an amazing band name. God love that hamburger sound. Hello, New York, we're Hamburgers. Oh hey, did you get that new Hamburgers album? Yeah, I used to like Hamburgers, until they sold out. Wow, says Enjolras. Their fall from grace happened really fast.
Grantaire shrugs.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, man. I remember when hamburgers used to be about the music.
They're still talking when Enjolras' house comes into view. Grantaire has this moment where he's tempted to circle the block so they can stretch it out for another minute or two. He has the sense, right then, that Enjolras wouldn't call him on it. Then again, Grantaire's brain is not to be trusted on the subject. Enjolras is a human Bermuda Triangle. He jams the system. Grantaire had forgotten how much he used to dread passing periods. That combination of crowds and low supervision is a general recipe for badness. He starts loading up before classes as much as he can. The less trips back and forth to his locker, the better. The resulting back pain is doing nothing for his health, and it has the uncanny side effect of making him early to class, but nothing can be done about that. On Tuesday, he's the first person to world myth except Mr. Clark, who politely pretends not to notice. Grantaire grabs his usual seat, turns down the volume on his headphones, and pulls out a handout from the Career Center. On the back is the drawing he's been working on all day. Struggling on would be more accurate. He wants to design better cover art for Barrel's mix, the one about fighting the system, but he can't get it to match the picture in his head. Less of a picture, more of an idea. Normally, he would have given up at this point. Today, he keeps unfolding it again, trying shit and erasing. He's not sure why. He's not planning to show it to Barrel, and he still hasn't found the courage to even play the CD for Enjolras. Maybe he just wants to know he can do it. Someone taps his shoulder, and Grantaire jumps, but when he whirls around, it's just Jehan.
"Good morning," says Jehan. He's so bouncy, it borders on an impression of Jolie.
"Would you like some ridiculous teen gossip?"
Grantaire nods. Why not if it's got the kid in such a good mood? And Jehan slides into his seat.
"Guess who's going to prom?"
"Oh, man."
Grantaire grins.
"Dude, that's great."
"You didn't guess," says Jehan with a sigh, its effectiveness undercut by the way he hasn't stopped bouncing.
"It's me, though," is the answer. "It's me." He points to himself for clarification.
"High five," Grantaire says, and they slap hands.
"So did Courfeyrac..." He breaks off, not quite sure how to ask, "What made him stop worrying the student body would murder you?" without bringing down the mood.
"Oh-ho, who said it was Courfeyrac?" says Jehan slyly.
He bounces twice.
"Yeah, no, it was Courfeyrac. We were talking after lit, and he went into this thing about, like, finding someone to stand back-to-back with, and joining forces against prejudice. And I kept thinking, are you asking me out, or asking me to fight crime with you?"
"You would make an awesome superhero. Just saying," Grantaire interjects.
"Maybe it goes against your cat burglar dreams, but..."
Jehan smiles.
"And finally, I just said, look, if we're gonna team up against evil, can we do it at least once in awkward formal wear surrounded by cheesy decorations and insipid pop songs? With, like, slow dancing and stuff?"
"You asked him to his own prom?"
It's easy to forget sometimes that Jehan is a sophomore, too young to qualify for a ticket by himself.
"Bro, that takes some serious game."
"It may turn out I have moves," says Jehan, tapping the heel of a glittery salmon-colored loafer against the chair leg. "A move or two, perhaps."
"And he said yes?" Grantaire prompts, as Jehan rolls his eyes.
"Oh my god, Grantaire, context."
3 bounces. Another smile.
"He totally did."
The plan is working.
The plan is actually working. A fake relationship spawning a real one.
Grantaire can't fathom it.
Maybe Enjolras was right after all.
Maybe none of this has to be in vain.
He wants to cheer, or jump up on his desk, or run through the hallways yelling, "Nice try, fuckers!"
He wants to hug Jehan. He wants to hug Enjolras.
Hell, he just wants to see Enjolras, to be where he is. Waiting until the ride home on Friday feels like an impossibly long wait to talk about this.
God! He can't wait for Andros's reaction. The scope and brilliance of his smile.
It's been a while since Granterra stopped to appreciate just how fucked he is, but it hits him now with the clarity of a ringing bell.
Seriously, he thinks, still grinning from the sheer strength of Jeanne's delight, like gravity that pulls up. Seriously. So fucked.